Hello, everybody, and welcome to our closing out of the week of the Damage Report. I'm John Adirola. Brett Ehrlich is here.
Really?
Yeah, wearing a shirt that I have to say, I really like that shirt.
Thank you. My new approach is to just get things that look like they're dirty. And if you get real close on this, you see that there's a little flecks that look like lint. But it's not lint, it's a design. Deal with it.
Well, some of it could be lint, but we would never know.
Yeah, there you go. And that's the dominant strategy when you're as filthy through and through as I am.
Okay, this is an interesting start to our show. But
watch the Happy Half Hour today, this evening at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern. When is it? Pacific? I don't know. Sophie knows. It's today. Members get it. Watch the whole damn thing. TYT.com/join. Jason Carter and I are in
it.
And if you're a member, you also get our roundup of the Golden Globes. So good morning.
I want to see that.
Yeah, see, I'm a good salesman.
There you
just
go.
Like my dad.
Okay, well then allow me to attempt to sell this show. In just a little bit, we're going to be hitting impeachment, which moves a step closer today. And Mitch McConnell reveals his strategy for how he's going to deal with this in the Senate. Later on, new dancing viral video in the Democratic primary. Who gets it and who doesn't? We'll be breaking that down. Also, you've heard of the squad. Well, how would you like a conservative squad? No, nobody wants that? Well, Fox is gonna give it to you anyway. So we're gonna be revealing that to close out the show. Also, a congressional candidate's gonna be joining us in studio. His name is Cenk Uygur. What's up with that? I don't know. We'll have to wait just a little bit to find out. But exactly. Nobody gets his joke. Nobody.
I didn't.
I barely. No. Okay.
Made me. I'm Jason Sudeikis in the What's Up With That.
Exactly.
For those listening to the podcast, I am doing finger points and a lot of spasmodic movements.
Okay. Apologies for the past. Apologies for the future. Let's move into impeachment. Let's do it. Today, one step closer to impeachment with the House voting in committee to advance two articles of impeachment. Both articles, the first charging Trump with abuse of power and the second charging him with obstruction of Congress, were approved by the committee on party line votes, with all 23 Democrats voting in favor and all 17 Republicans voting against, because weeks and weeks of testimony. I mean, when you have a system where you vote in the people with open minds who will listen to the evidence, a lot of minds were swayed.
Yeah, as I said, there's a fallacy of partisanship. I mean, ideally, what you would think is partisanship, a bipartisan thing would emerge when the ideas in it are easily agreed upon, and people are open to them and appraise facts and decide based on facts. But that's not what the case is. So you have a lot of people saying, "Oh, I thought this was supposed to be bipartisan." It's if the solution to that is you guys like actually listening to facts and acting accordingly, but you've decided not to because that's politically expedient for you, so we're just gonna gallop apace.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm gonna say something that is both simultaneously like stupid, but also I think should be 100% true. And Brett, more than anyone, is totally comfortable calling me out when I say something just actually stupid. So what should have happened here is, because of how obvious what Trump did was, how clearly inappropriate it was, the Republicans should have said, you know what, we love Donald Trump, we love the Trump agenda, we wanna make America great again, but unfortunately we care about the sanctity of our elections, and no president should be allowed to enlist the help of a foreign government to overthrow it. So we are going to vote to remove Donald Trump, but Mike Pence, who so far as we know had no involvement in this, he will be carrying the torch going forward, and in fact will be running in 2020 to carry on the good parts of the Trump agenda. Like, if we were reasonable and not just devoted to our party, that's what should have happened.
Right, reasonable in turn. Well, ideally, if you are putting America first, you would put the founding documents of America first, the idea of what America stands for. But they don't do that. They just want to retain, as is the major criticism that underlines essentially trying to get money out of politics. The major criticism is that the driving factor for politicians is not to serve their constituents, it's just to keep their jobs.
Yeah.
And they do whatever they can to keep their jobs. Ideally, that is somehow pegged to the public will, but that's not the case, as they've denied. I mean, because you hear those statements over and over again. The 14 hours of impeachment markup was Republicans denying the fact that 70%+ of Americans think that what the president did was wrong. Flotsam and Jetsam from The Little Mermaid are Jacket Off Jordan and Devin Nunes. They just want to please Ursula the Sea Witch. And the Ursula the Sea Witch is Donald Trump. And they deny reality to do it because they just want to serve him so bad.
Yeah.
And he is their ticket, not pleasing him is not the final goal. The goal is to keep their jobs, and they think this is the best way to do it.
Because if they turned on Trump, then presumably he would sic his cult against them and they couldn't be reelected.
Yeah.
Which is plausible, actually.
And all the Republicans who got out because they realized there was literally no way to keep their jobs. Mm-hmm. Turning on the president would have made them lose their job if they kept seeking their office. Yeah. And not turning on the president would have made them lose their job. So they just quit.
Yeah, and along the way, as you say, they deny, you know, where public opinion is. But they also, I mean, I would say a step beyond that is they still keep saying, but Ukraine didn't know the aid was being held.
It's just false.
That's just false.
Trump
said
it again
today. It's false in every way that a thing could be false. All of the evidence is 100% clear. Anyone can access it at any time that shows that they knew for months that it was being denied. They were trying to figure out how to get it unblocked. But it's 2019 and apparently it just doesn't matter. They can simply say that 2 + 2 = 3. And then you say, that's crazy. We know it's 4. Look, it's in a book, it's 4. No, I don't read books, so.
Even in the Senate, like Mitch McConnell is the one who simultaneously said that Nancy Pelosi has been dragging her feet in terms of like the like USMCA, for example. Mm-hmm. She's been dragging her feet so long. She's been obstructing Congress from getting the job done.
Yeah.
But she just passed it.
And
whether you think that's a good idea or not, she did just pass it. And he's the one saying, I'm going to focus on impeachment. They were like, no, we patted our head and rubbed our tummy at the same time.
Yeah.
He's like, you guys are so slow on this. I'm going to be slow. It's your fault.
Yeah.
No.
And literally the only chance there is that a Trump supporter will be confronted with that inconvenient set of facts is if Chris Wallace brings it up and they're watching Fox early in the day. That's about it.
Yeah.
Sean Hannity's not going to be asking tough questions about the inconsistency of Mitch McConnell. He had him on last night. We're going to have some video in just a minute about that. Let's go really fast through what the final articles of impeachment actually say. Article 1 concerning abuse of power focuses on the underlying facts. It says that Trump corruptly solicited the government of Ukraine to publicly announce investigations into Joe Biden and into, quote, a discredited theory that Ukraine interfered with the 2016 election. Which is now, by the way, a theory endorsed by virtually everyone in the Republican Party solely because Donald Trump keeps saying it.
Yeah.
They know that it's not true, but they can't say Trump is wrong.
Yes. And all, by the way, these things that John's reading you right now, the Republicans are denying that these are in the articles of impeachment. They're saying nowhere here do they really talk about the any actual acts by the president. It's mm-hmm. just abuse of power. That's like saying the only thing in the Chamber of Secrets, the book, is it's they're just saying Chamber of Secrets. There's no Harry Potter in it. There's no Hermione in it. It's like, no, read the book, idiot.
Yeah, yeah, there was a good amount of both, I think.
Yeah.
If anything, I think Ron was underserved.
There's no magic. There's just chambers and secrets. It's like, open it, dude. It's an easy read.
Wait, open the chamber?
Because the book.
I mean, there's anything in there that you want. That's
oh,
okay.
My God.
Actually, that's the room of requirement. I'm getting my Harry Potter mixed up.
I knew that. I was about to make a room of requirement.
What have I done anyway?
I'm glad you got to it first.
Something, something, Remus Lupin. I don't know. Okay, so now why does this matter? All of this is abusing the powers of the presidency, quote, by ignoring and injuring national security and other vital national interests to obtain an improper personal political benefit. The article also asserts that Trump betrayed the nation by abusing his high office to enlist a foreign power in corrupting democratic elections, which again should not be a controversial thing to state that it's a bad thing and that it was done, considering the evidence that we've seen and that earlier this year he told us on TV that he would do this if he had the opportunity.
The thing that they're talking about now is us versus me for Trump when he said, I'd like you to do us a favor though.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the favor he lists benefits him.
Only him, yeah.
He's saying, I said us, not me, us, me. It's like, bro, if anyone uses the royal we, it's Donald Trump.
Yeah, that's true, that's true. Okay, so Article 2 says that Trump directed the White House to defy a subpoena for documents, directed other executive branch agencies such as the State Department and the Defense Department to defy subpoenas, directed current and former executive branch officials to refuse subpoenas for their testimony. All of that is, that's just true. And again, it's one of those things, I know that I keep just running up against this wall of frustration that I have, but they did that and Republicans wanted him to do that. They didn't want any of these people to provide documents or to testify. Everyone who did testify, they attacked viciously. So they simultaneously wanted that outcome and will now deny that that is what actually happened.
Yeah.
When all of them were saying, don't, this is an illegal coup. You don't have to respect this at all. You don't have to go for it. Like, when I just saw a video of Mitch McConnell back from like 1998 talking about why one of the worst things Bill Clinton has done is stonewall Congress in their investigation into his oral sex activities. Mm-hmm. So they in the past got that the White House is supposed to comply with these sorts of things, but in the past decade they've lost interest in it.
Yes. Once you said oral sex, I stopped focusing on everything.
Okay. Well, I apologize. I should have known that was gonna happen. Okay, and so to just give you an idea of where it's gonna go, now we have about a week before theoretically the House votes on it. The way it works right now, 19 Democratic defections would kill the impeachment vote. Depending on who you talk to, that seems either extremely unlikely or maybe potentially with some Democrats in districts that Trump won. It's almost certainly the case that it will not be 100% Democratic support for it, but it is a difficult thing as a Democrat to try to make the case in, you know, later this year that there should be a Democrat in office at all if the Democrat is there and is not holding Trump accountable.
Yeah.
Like, the idea is you don't want to scare off the Trump voters. But I would argue those Trump voters want a Republican more than a Democrat that didn't impeach Trump.
Yes, and you can still do this. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's on you. You have to message correctly, mm-hmm. and you have to say. And you hear like there's a bunch of Democrats. I forget who it is, Slotkin or someone who's out there right now going, I haven't made up my mind yet, but I might act independent of what polls tell me to do so that I can do what's right. And I think, as long as you vote yes, because it's very clear that that's what's happening. Also, you are a Democrat and you, get this, need their votes. You need them to show up. You need to motivate them to be there. You need to, at the very least, vote yes on this.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, if you actually believe that you've looked at all this evidence and you somehow insanely don't think that he committed impeachable offenses, fine, vote against it. But if you are voting to protect a president who has done all of this, this great threat to the future of our democracy, if you're voting to protect him solely to protect your own seat, you need to be primaried and taken out of that spot immediately. Like, what a callous, self-interested, amoral act that is. To say that, like, that you care that you hold this stupid congressional seat, and so you're gonna sign off on Trump's criminal acts.
Yeah. Ideally, the self-interest would end up working in your favor, but that was in a time when people were interested in moral folks.
Yeah, yeah.
As voters, and I think they are. You just need to remind people of that.
Yeah.
Remind that you're doing the right thing. Point out, like, none of Trump's arguments hold water. They're coming down. You know, if you think of the most embarrassing moment in the impeachment deposition for Clinton, it was him saying, it depends on what your definition of is. Trump's defense now is down to, when I said us, I meant America, even though everything I was asking for was for me personally.
Yeah.
Everything he's doing is for me. My official defense against Trump, you know, defenses is bro. Like, bro, come on.
Yeah.
Everyone in America, close their eyes. Take the president who just had to pay $2 million for defrauding a charity.
Which in any other year would be, or any other presidency would be a massive scandal.
He's defrauded soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
The troops. He's defrauded the troops. Do you think you're any different? It's okay. It's okay to look at him and reject him because, bro.
Because
this was
bro.
All for you, bro.
Okay, we're gonna take a short break. We come back. Congressional candidate Cenk Uygur is gonna be joining me in studio to talk about the race after this.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Joining us now in studio, congressional candidate for California's 25th district. It's Cenk Uygur.
Yes.
Okay, I think I did that right.
I've got a
hard last name, so I understand the struggle.
It's San, right? Son. Oh, no, John?
No,
oh.
Yes. Okay, you got it. The H right. Throws people off. Cenk, welcome to the studio. You're joining us as a guest to talk about your race.
Yes, indeed.
And so, look, I want to start off. We're going to get into your platform and everything, but over the past couple of days, you've received a couple of, I would say, important endorsements.
Yeah.
Tell us about them.
Yeah, so Bernie Sanders endorsed yesterday. He is an absolute legend, and it's the honor of a lifetime to get his endorsement. And Ro Khanna and Nina Turner, wonderful, wonderful progressive fighters. And I need people to understand what kind of courage it takes for them to do that, because immediately there's blowback, of course, right? The establishment media is attacking 100%. And giving a totally skewed perspective of who I am. Mm-hmm. If you read any mainstream media articles, you might think like, who is this guy? Mm-hmm. and what right-wing channel is he on? And how do I fight this guy, mm-hmm. right? So
just to be clear, you're not on the right.
No, okay. I'm pretty sure that they've criticized me my whole life for being too far left.
That's, yes, generally they have. And look, so we decided that we would do something. We're gonna have another video where we're gonna go over your platform. I know it's weird in a congressional race to talk about where a candidate stands on the issues. But look, Ro Khanna, I mean, was a huge star yesterday in his speech that he gave when he was voting against the NDAA. A lot of good people voted against it, but he articulated the anti-war position very well. Nina Turner, one of the most inspiring political speakers. Like, she gets me fired up every time she joins the show. And Bernie Sanders is one of the front runners that could potentially be the next president. It seems like that would generate a lot of positive press. I mean, imagine if
that's a good one.
I know that's a stupid, naive thing to say, but like Bernie Sanders has done more than perhaps any other individual person to shape the political debates going on in the Democratic primary right now, and he just endorsed you in this primary.
Yes. So look, to be fair to folks, there's been plenty of great press to like people mentioning, wow, this is really important for progressives. This 25th district race is really interesting, establishment versus Democrat. Now Bernie and all the progressives have come on one side. So HuffPost, Mediaite, Inquisitor, The Hill, all good pieces that give you proper context, right? On the other hand, the bigger the outlets, CNN more than anyone else, has written complete attack pieces. Why? It's a twofer. They're like, oh my God, we hate progressive Bernie Sanders and we hate progressive Cenk Uygur. Perfect opportunity to attack both of them and then pretend that they're not left wing enough. Really, we're not left wing enough to appease CNN? Does anyone believe that? Okay,
it's
preposterous.
It's having your bubble and eating it too.
Yeah,
So now, to be fair, one of the candidates that you're running against potentially, Christy Smith, so she's gotten some endorsements recently too.
Yes.
So I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but Nancy Pelosi, Barbara Boxer, Kamala Harris?
No, Dianne Feinstein.
Sorry, Dianne Feinstein.
Yes.
So three of the highest profile, most powerful California politicians. I assume they went back and forth with you a little bit before deciding. But anyway, what do you make of
Senator Feinstein reached out and was like, well, look, Cenk, I'm weighing the different things. On the one hand, I've built my whole career on taking corporate contributions, which you're completely against, and point out to people rightfully that they're bribes. On the other hand, you really seem to stick up for the people.
Yeah. It seems like the fact you have the three that we mentioned for you, we have the three lining up pretty predictably behind Christy Smith. Look, is this not the race that you want to have, making it very clear where the lines are drawn?
It 100% is. I actually welcome her endorsements. I mean, if Dianne Feinstein or Nancy Pelosi had endorsed me, then you should raise an eyebrow and go, wait, what's wrong with Cenk?
If Pelosi endorsed you, that would be a bizarre day in American politics.
Yes, so I do not want their endorsements. I'm happy that my opponent has them. Mm-hmm. And what people don't see is they control the entire Democratic Party in California. Mm-hmm. So that filters down to all the operatives at all the different levels. That's why they all put out the same talking points. None of them have called me. No, none of them have a genuine interest in, hey, who is Cenk Uygur? Hey, should we vote for the progressive or should we vote for the establishment candidate? Mm-hmm. Hey, should we go for Medicare for all? Well, Cenk's for Medicare for all and Christie isn't and Pelosi isn't and Feinstein isn't. And there, none of them are for Green New Deal and Cenk is. No, all of the little local party operatives inside the state of California literally got their marching orders. My opponent, Christie, the other day bragged about how we built a bench here and we decided who was going to be the next politician from here. Who's we? Well, I wasn't invited to that back room. None of the voters were invited to that back room deal. So they obviously have a back room deal. That's not how democracy works. Mm-hmm. Cenk2020.com, Cenk2020.com. By the way, I'm doing videos throughout the campaign. My opponents are hiding. They're in the witness protection program. Christy only came out a couple of nights ago because she thought she might lose on her own home turf. She didn't even show up for the meeting in her home club. Mm-hmm. And then when she found out that she lost a preliminary vote, she came in a panic. And then she was like, oh, yeah, I mean, of course, I will now make my case. Oh, nice to see you out among the people.
What was this vote concerning?
It was about whether they were going to endorse her. It's her home club. Okay. She's going to win the endorsement. But we put a little bit of fear of God in them. And then so she had to scramble and come back to try to win. But that's not the point. The point is they're hiding. They don't want to talk about the issues under any circumstances. And the corporate media helps them completely because they say, oh, I don't want to cover the issues. Oh, if you got a smear, though, oh, great. By the way, if I put out anything on Christie along the lines of what they put out on me, I would be shocked if the media would cover it. They'd be like, that is outrageous. You are talking about old things that she has said. Mm-hmm. How could you possibly do that? Let's go back to talking about old things you said. Yeah. Cenk2020.com, I'm not playing. Without you guys, I can't win. I'm saying it on every show, no matter where I go. And there's all these wonderful progressive shows. We don't need the mainstream media. Cenk2020.com, millions are coming against us. If I win, though, my God, they're in a world of trouble. Because they can't ever say anymore, we can't win, progressives can't win in a purple districts. And they can't shut me up. That's why they're in a cold sweat panic. Mm-hmm. Imagine me on the floor of the House saying, yeah, no, here's my Democratic colleague, let alone every Republican, my Republican colleagues and my Democratic colleagues. And here are the bribes that they took from the drug industry to make sure that they keep your drug prices high. Here's their name, here's the amount. Yeah. Now, can you see why they're going to spend millions against me? But if I win, they cannot stop it. They cannot stop it. And if you guys give, you volunteer, we're going to win and we're going to shock the world and it's going to be fantastic. The other reason they're panicked is because I'm arguably the favorite now. Mm-hmm. And they're like, no, how did that happen?
Has there been polling, internal or external?
No, of course not. But for them, the only proxy is money. And since 17,000 individual donors have given to me or individual donations, they're like, it turns out progressives are super powerful. We thought we could just steamroll them, but we can't steamroll this guy. So put me in, coach. Put me in, coach. Cenk2020.com. I'm not playing. With volunteers, we are going to steamroll them. We're going to reach every voter. We're going to tell them the truth, and then they got no chance.
Okay, so we're going to take a short break. We come back. We are going to talk about your platform, make sure that people actually know what you want to do if you get into Congress, since they won't find that out from the articles that have recently been written. So we're going to take a short break, but stick around. Cenk returns after this. And now more with a congressional candidate for the 25th District of California, Cenk Uygur. Okay, so Cenk, I've read a lot of articles about this race, and coming out of it, I have learned, I want to list all of what I've learned about your positions and Christy Smith, the most prominent other candidate. Nothing, none of the profile. I don't know, if I didn't know you, I wouldn't know what you plan to do when you get into Congress. And honestly, at this point, for Christy Smith, I don't know what she plans to do if she gets into Congress.
Yeah.
I can speculate about both of you, but why don't we talk about what you actually aim to do?
Yeah, let's talk about me and then we'll talk about Christy. So number one, for me, the issue of corruption is everything because it affects every other issue. So For example, school shooting in our district, Saugus High School. Well, why do 97% of Americans want federal background checks? Why don't we have it? Because the NRA bribes the entire Republican Party. That's the only reason, period, full stop. If you're not talking about that, then you don't care about school shootings and you don't care to fix them. If you're talking about something else, no. If we just convince 98% of the country to be for federal background checks, no, that's not a logical argument and you know it. So I'm gonna go and attack them full force. McConnell, Trump, the NRA, all the donors. But on every issue, so Aliso Canyon, there's the biggest gas leak in American history. That's the 25th district. And at the time, Steve Knight, the Republican, is the congressman in that district. He doesn't defend the people in the district, he defends the company. You're gonna be shocked to find out why, John.
Are you implying that they supported him?
Yes, it turns out he took donations from Sempra, the parent company, and so defended the parent company. Yeah. What a wonderful coincidence again. Okay, so Medicare for All. So none of the major candidates in the race are for Medicare for All except me. So if you want somebody to fight for Medicare for All, it is a no-brainer. It's me. Christy Smith is against it. She's against it. Green New Deal, it's me. They're not for it.
Okay. Has she been explicitly, I do not support
Medicare for All? Yes. So she said she's thinking about the public option. Okay. All right. At this rate, you know, we'll get Medicare for All and single parent about 280 years.
Okay.
So on Green New Deal, she sent out an email saying, I think we should get back in the Paris Climate Accords. How very, very bold.
Well, I do agree we should.
Yes, agreed. I'm pretty sure that's the bare minimum. And that is exactly what her and all of her corporate Democrat friends are in favor of. The bare minimum. And that's why she's hiding all of her issues. She's not doing any press. All she's doing is fundraisers outside of the district in Beverly Hills and Hollywood. They're all private. They're all like thousands. You got to pay thousands of dollars to get in. I think one of them is minimum is $100. But really, I mean, that's the riffraff, right? But they were trying to get you to pay in $2,000, $5,000, et cetera. So average donation so far for her is $2,700. I mean, it's preposterous. It's absolutely preposterous.
Do you know your average?
Yeah, my average is, last I checked this morning, was $28.21.
And just to be clear, because we asked this of basically all the candidates, what is your fundraising strategy? Where do you want to get money from? Where will you not take money from?
My fundraising strategy is you, jank2020.com. And I mean that in terms of all of the voters, all of the progressive base. That's why I'm not just coming on here, I'm going up to every media outlet that'll have me, hostile or not, and I'm making my case. Because taking my case to the voters, I'm not gonna take any corporate PAC money, I'm not gonna take any lobbyist money. So if I'm gonna win, the people are gonna put me in. And it's gonna be the people's seat. And that'll drive them nuts if you say, hey, you have no power over me. I don't owe a single politician a favor. I don't owe a single corporation a favor. I don't owe a single lobbyist a favor. The only people I owe a favor to is the voters, okay? Yeah. Isn't it so sad and sick of our system that that's a revolutionary idea? That's supposed to be the core of democracy. Look, Christy Smith has never even talked about money out of politics. Like, what does she want? What is her strategy for getting money out of politics? Well, she takes direct corporate contributions. So it appears that her strategy is, no, I want to keep taking the money, the corporate money, and serve them.
Let me ask you a question about strategy, actually, because there is a possibility that hypothetically you could win this race and be in the House, maybe even a Democrat-dominated House with a second-term Trump presidency, or maybe Biden or Sanders, someone wins. Democrats control the House, Republicans still control the Senate. What is your strategy to pursue your agenda if there's not unified Democratic control, as it seems like there's not a gigantic chance there will be?
So my strategy is far more pragmatic than any other, okay? And I'll tell you why. So if the current strategy for most folks, ranging from this completely to this a little bit, depending on where they are in the spectrum, is beseech leadership. Pretty please, Democratic leadership, will you be for Medicare for All at a later date to be never named? Okay. And how's that working for us? No chance. Nancy Pelosi says, I don't care for Medicare for All. She says, Green New Deal is Green Dream or whatever. It's only supported by four people. So if you're pursuing the path of pleasing and trying to get the Democratic leadership to be on your side, that is an impossible path. It is not practical. It will not work. It has no chance of working, okay? The only practical path is to put political public pressure. And that's the only thing that's ever led to change. So when Martin Luther King put pressure on Lyndon Johnson, he passed the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act. Mm-hmm. If Martin Luther King had not put that public pressure on by naming the problem and calling it racism and marching against it and willing to sacrifice for it, there's no way Lyndon Johnson would have passed the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act. We must put that political pressure. You know what I'm gonna do? If I'm on the floor of the House, I'm gonna invite the people into the House. It's your house. It's the House of Representatives. As much as they will allow the public, I will invite the public. Mm-hmm. I want them to hear our speeches. I want them to hear me fighting for Medicare for All and Green New Deal and getting money out of politics and ending the school shootings and all of these things. And I want them to hear the Republicans and the corporate Democrats say, no, we shouldn't do any of that. Mm-hmm. No, ExxonMobil disagrees. We shouldn't do it. Great, let's have that debate and let's have it with everyone watching, because they have no chance of winning that debate. So you do carrots and sticks. So far, unfortunately, even progressives haven't brought out enough sticks. Mm-hmm. And
there's been a few public protests and things like that against Nancy Pelosi early on. Yeah. So you're talking about if you get elected and people can expect that you'll be doing public speeches attacking Pelosi, Schumer, if they're wrong on the issue, even if it makes you the most ostracized man in the House. You don't mind. That's you're gonna do it
on the floor of the House. Okay.
Okay.
I'm coming to their house. Okay. And you're gonna send me. If you don't send me, then I'm not going. Right. If there's not enough money, there's not enough volunteers, then we didn't make it. And they're gonna say, yes, we're back in charge without any pesky progressives. We'll never do any of your priorities. That's a reality. It's almost. I don't know how anybody could argue against that.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you send me in, put me in, Coach. You send me in. We're not gonna let them get away with trying to cover things up. They're not gonna cover it up. Then we're gonna have a real fight and find out what is the core of the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. Is it all the things that FDR said, JFK said, on a domestic level, what LBJ said? Or is it, no, we please our corporate donors and try to appease Republicans? If you never have that fight, we never win it because they're in charge. Mm-hmm. If you have a public fight, then they're going to be embarrassed because we are 100% right and they are 100% wrong.
Well, it's a strategy that the Republicans have used against the Democrats quite a bit.
And they won 1,000 seats with that strategy,
exactly.
By the way.
Okay, unfortunately, we're out of time. Where can people go to see more about your
Thank
campaign?
You, John. First of all, obviously, as you know, jank2020.com/go to donate. Go as in put me in there. jank2020.com/team to volunteer. That would be amazing. This Sunday, we're doing a people's fundraiser. You don't have to give, it's optional. We're encouraging $27 donation to come. So that's jank2020.com/meet, as in meet up with us. Okay, that's in Santa Clarita, that's in the district. Okay, that's this weekend, it's on Sunday. But guys, also remember, follow me on Twitter if you at Cenk Uygur if you want updates on the campaign, because I cannot talk about it on the show when I'm hosting, which is 98% of what I do on air. I'm not allowed to talk about it. So if you want to follow campaign stuff as opposed to TYT stuff, not just Twitter, but really importantly, Facebook, facebook.com/CenkUygurOfficial.
Where you're putting up videos.
Where I'm putting up behind the scenes videos where they say, oh my God, you know, he's talking to the people. I wonder if we could use this against him. I don't give a damn. I'm gonna talk to you guys all throughout the campaign. I'm gonna tell you all the behind the scenes. Let's go get them together. Cenk2020.com, facebook.com/CenkUygurOfficial.
Okay, Cenk, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Jeff.
Everybody at home, we're gonna take a short break. Brett's gonna come back. We've got the big political viral video of the day that some people don't seem to understand. We'll break it down after this. Not too many weeks ago, a video of Pete Buttigieg supporters dancing went viral because some people thought that it was a little bit, as they say on the internet, cringy. Well, now we have this. So Nick Ciarelli tweeted out, look out team Pete, because us Bloomberg heads have our own dance taken at the Mike Bloomberg rally in Beverly Hills. So we're gonna play the video for you. We can't play the music because we don't want our studio to be nuked from orbit by the copyright gods. But here is the dance.
Space gods? I am. In the world, yo man, this is the best. I will do the voiceover though, because the voiceover is pretty great. Ready? There's a certain point where they go, Bloomberg.
Yes.
Bloomberg. Like that.
Yes.
In a very deadpan
way. I think it's actually, so like it's like twice, it's Mike Bloomberg.
That's
like,
what it is, yeah.
So, okay, I wanna be clear about something. Do we agree on this? It's not real.
It's just hard to say that that's a rally in Beverly Hills when it's very obviously a black box theater where people are looking around like, oh my God, I get to be part of the show.
Yes.
Like, this is a black box theater. This is a version of hell. Mm-hmm. An improv show at a black box theater. Many people are, if they're bad on this plane of existence, they spend the rest of their lives here watching terrible improv. However,
I recently went to a black box theater and saw a delightful play.
No,
it wasn't improv, but no, I did. I really liked it. Anyway,
look,
obviously, it doesn't really sell it without the sound. You should definitely go and look and do the whole thing. But the thing is, my issue with this was that the guy, Nick, who put this together, is part of like a comedy duo that does like satirical videos about politics. But
yeah,
either people didn't know him or they can't be bothered to Google. So everybody, I know why, everybody was attacking this as, look at how sad those Bloomberg supporters are. And I get it. You don't like Bloomberg, so you wanna mock his supporters, assuming there are any. But like, you gotta be a thinking person with common sense. You can't watch that and think, no, this is an authentic expression of our love for Mike Bloomberg and our support of his presidential candidacy.
But you don't know, man.
I don't know what, if it's real or not.
I get the initial moment where you don't know for sure what's going on.
But I'm just saying, before you, if a piece of evidence is presented to you and it seems like it perfectly confirms everything you want to be true. Like, I want videos of the supporters of politicians I don't support to look lame or whatever.
Yeah.
Then you can't just be like, it's true, it's definitely true. I'm gonna use this.
That's,
I think you just have to pump the brakes a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. You're right. You're absolutely right. And this happened yesterday on the show. There was like a thing, I was like, oh my God. It was a pitch. It was something about like a Target being sold by a company or whatever. And it was for cops.
I saw that, yes.
They were like this.
It was
like
a target of a person filming the cops.
And it looks like, but you look at it and you're like, oh my God, it looks like they train cops to shoot people filming them. But you look at it and it was a two-sided target. And the other side is someone with a gun. The front side is someone filming. And it teaches cops not to shoot them.
Yes, okay.
For a second, I was like, oh my God, this confirms every bias that I have. But then again, like, you just do a little bit more research. But
That's good.
As much both sidesism as there is out there, this is one of those things that regardless of party, you just need to take an extra moment and breathe it in.
Mm-hmm.
You realize, and it's interesting, and what makes it good satire is it also points out something else about some other truth about how people are. It created something that folks were really willing to buy into.
That's definitely true. And so...
Like Gorka, who said it was
like
not a parody.
Sebastian Gorka, apparently not a parody.
Apparently from whom?
So that sounds like he got additional information. You didn't.
But that exposes him.
It does.
That is how he works. And that is exactly how Trump works, by the way. Mm-hmm. He says a lot of people are saying this. No, they're not.
They're not.
Apparently not a parody. No, it's not. Ben Shapiro said it's like a bunch of 80-year-olds inhabited the body of 35-year-olds, and he like dug it himself.
For the record, I know the feeling.
But like, yo. That is the point of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's making fun of Pete, but it's also you.
But it's also making fun of us.
You've been had.
Mm-hmm.
You've been had.
Yes, it's a funny video, very well done to create this sort of thing that is sort of frustrating, but also funny. I guess we should be able to laugh at ourselves a little bit. Anyway, we have to take a break. When we come back, the conservative squad, apparently a thing. We'll describe it to you after this.
This is about bringing the conservative message to the people of the United States so that people understand that we're looking at do-nothing Democrats.
So the audio of that could be any 7 seconds from Fox News. But you see there in the lower third, the conservative squad. Wait, what? I like the squad. I like spinoffs. What do you got with the conservative squad there? Well, it's this thing that they're trying to put together. A couple of candidates who are running as Republicans, those four women, and Fox News could not be more excited about this. Here's a bit of video explaining why the squad has formed.
Republican Alabama congressional candidate Jessica Taylor joins us now with the conservative squad. We have Minnesota congressional candidate Michelle Fischbach, South Carolina congressional candidate Nancy Mace, and Texas congressional candidate Beth Van Dyne. Thank you, ladies, for being with us. Jessica, congratulations. You actually did this.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for having us.
When you look at these ladies that want to form a conservative squad with you, what goes through your mind?
You know, I'm just honored that they want to join in this fight, and that's exactly what it is. You know, we are losing the younger generations of this country, and I'm so grateful that they're willing to join up and help in this cause.
Okay, Michelle, why did you want to be a part of the squad?
You don't need to see more of it. I don't know what any of that meant. So congratulations for you, you for calling yourself the squad. What do you mean?
There's so much wrong with this. Like the formation of the squad, is a name that ended up happening. First of all,
it was a name applied to a thing that existed without a name.
Stop trying to make squad happen. That's what you're doing. Congratulations that we really needed something like this. First of all, we're trying to undercut the legitimacy of the actual squad, but we're underscoring it
by saying we
that we need our own version. You doinks.
Yes. Look, here are good. I'm gonna devil's advocate. Good points about the conservative squad. It is good to see female candidates on the Republican side because there are not generally a lot.
And such a diverse group of them. You've got young white women. You've got old white women. You've got you got blonde women with brown hair.
There's a brunette. And so that is true. So that's the most important part. The squad was not a thing where like. Some political like I don't know organizer was like, I want a squad. Who should I put in the squad? It was that these four plus women organically were generating interest and enthusiasm. They were backing each other up. They were all just as yes, but I'm saying they were doing things and people were like, oh, that's cool. And then the name got applied. It was to a thing that existed.
The squad is a part of the progressive movement on the left and. That was an underserved group that, because they were frustrated at not being served, decided to take center stage. And in doing so, went against the establishment by unseating, in AOC's case, Joe Crowley. What aspect of that carries over into this squad?
Yeah.
No. You guys are trying to message that you reach out to women too by going and casting a bunch of women.
Yeah.
Period. It's so transparent. It's so ridiculous. They even start like the second one from the right. As much as they say, like, listen, AOC is just a bartender. What an idiot bartender. First words out of the mouth of the one on the right are, I used to be a Waffle House waitress and look how far I've come. How is it okay for her to say that, but it's not okay for AOC?
I think it's right for both of them to say it.
I'm fine with it too, but it's like it undercuts its legitimacy when the origins are so cynical and transparent.
Yeah, and the reason that the squad got the pickup on the left that it did was that we have had any number, literally hundreds of run-of-the-mill, replaceable centrist Democratic candidates that go into office, they get elected to the House of Representatives, and then you don't hear anything from them for literally years. They do some stuff behind the scenes to ingratiate themselves to the party, and then you know some senator dies, and so they run for senator, and that's basically what happens. These women came in, and not only did they break records in terms of being younger or running in places and winning a Muslim candidate, winning in an area that typically doesn't, like all these things that actually made them stand out. They didn't just sit down and wait for something to happen. They made things happen before they were even sworn in. AOC was joining a protest that elevated this youth climate group where it's now a massive thing in the news. We're all talking about the Green New Deal. They did things to matter.
Right, and this is just, here we are, this is enough. It is identity politics. I hate when that term gets tossed about, but that is exactly what it is. But then let's listen to the like specifics of what they're arguing for. One of them said, listen, the we're fighting against socialism always. They've always already been saying that. But the other one says, the Congress is being run by fanatics and they're not doing anything.
Which is it? Too.
Are they fanatics doing crazy things or are they not doing anything? You can't have it both ways. And when you listen to them, and I'm sure you heard it too, it's just like copy-paste random terms.
No, it's the same as any other. They're not distinct from other Republican candidates. That's the thing.
Yeah.
So any other four Republican candidates, I mean, you should be the Avengers or you'd be X-Force. Just come up with a name for yourself because it doesn't have to mean anything anymore. Mm-hmm. Really fast, Ilhan Omar tweeted, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. Which I liked. And then let's just remind you that this is not the first fake squad that someone tried to conjure up. There was also these five freshman congresswomen changed history by becoming unlikely leaders on impeachment. That was the centrist squad.
The badass.
They were like literally the last five people to support impeachment. But they're the lead. And have you heard anything about the centrist squad?
Yes.
Have you?
Yes.
Since then?
No, they're all that they go to when they're talking about people waffling on impeachment.
Exactly. Okay, thank you so much. Great to have you here. We actually have a little bit of overtime. We've got a guest who's gonna be joining us from the UK to break down the election results in just a little bit. So if you're a member, you'll be able to watch that live. If not, fix that error really quick and you'll be able to see it. We're gonna take a short break. We'll be back after this. The results of yesterday's UK elections are now in. It was a good day for Boris Johnson and the Conservative Party. Despite movement in the polls in the weeks leading up to the election that seemed to indicate that Labour might do better than had previously been expected. Joining us now to break this down, UK journalist and filmmaker Billy Porter. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Glad to have you here. Wish we had some better news to discuss, but I know that you're in the UK right now, correct?
And it's pretty bleak vibes.
Yeah, I've been following a number of the UK like political Twitter personalities that I follow. There's been a lot of sort of soul searching, and also a lot of people, both on the UK side and the US side, trying to say what can we learn for the future of British politics, but also trying to apply it to the US, which I've heard is a different political system. But anyway, what do you think about some of the initial opinions that are being expressed in this postmortem? What do you think people are getting right about why the election went the way it did, and what are they getting wrong?
I mean, as far as everything that I've seen, it seems pretty split down the middle. People either think it's a Brexit issue or a Jeremy Corbyn issue. And I'm sure that there are, you know, multiple factors that came into it, but these are two very, very important issues that keep coming up time and time again. I think one of the most interesting things that has happened since people have been doing this, like autopsy, as you say, is that there have been several traditionally Labour strongholds that turned blue last night. And these were areas that predominantly voted to leave the EU. And sometimes they were people who had voted Labour in the past. And so it was obvious that Labour's stance on Brexit made them feel like their vote didn't really count for anything. And so it diminished their trust in the party, which I think personally is pretty ironic because the whole campaign to leave the EU was based on lies and misinformation. But it seems like Brexit had a really, really big part to play.
Okay, so you just raised a bunch that I'd like to get into, but you mentioned lies right there. So in the initial run-up to the referendum, lots of lies. It was also revealed that virtually all of the online ads that the Conservative Party ran on social media, 88% contained falsehoods. And so it seems like one of the lessons I would like to take from this is that allowing politicians to get away with spreading knowing lies is probably a bad idea for democracies. Do you agree?
I would have to agree with that. I mean, but it went beyond lying with this election. It was like cartoon villainous behavior. I don't know if you saw that the Conservatives rebranded their Twitter during a TV debate and pretended that they were a fact-checking service.
I did not see that.
It was insane. It was very, very deliberate deceit, and it just felt so, so lawless. And I think that I feel like people my age often they're accused of being sort of apathetic when it comes to politics. But I think it's just that we're losing trust, and there's so little reason for us to believe in the political class and the political system when it feels like democracy doesn't really exist right now over here or in the US.
So I saw that Jeremy Corbyn had announced that he will be stepping down as Labour's leader. He will not be the front of any future election. Where do you think that the Labour Party goes from here?
I mean, I'm a huge fan of Jeremy Corbyn, but I don't think that anyone can deny that he has, he's become a very, very divisive figure for people who used to vote Labour and for people within the party. I don't know. I feel like it's split down the middle. He made a very, very sweet speech today where he was saying that all of the sentiments and the spirit of his manifesto are eternal, you know, regardless of them losing this election. And that really spoke to me. I think that it's just so unfortunate that he's been painted as this kind of like caricature of himself. A lot of the reason that I think people were too scared to vote for him is that they couldn't imagine someone like Jeremy Corbyn in Downing Street, you know? Mm. We've watched him be bullied for wearing shabby suits and like, you know, people kind of making fun of him for having his vegetable patch or whatever. It's just kind of like, I don't know, he was made such a mockery of. People talk about the cult of Corbyn. They were just terrified of someone like him leading the party. They made out like he was this terrifying radical figure, and I don't think that's the case.
So I have a follow-up to that. This is Brett, by the way. When you talk about cartoonish figures, isn't Boris Johnson just one giant cartoon man? How
exactly
is he palatable while Corbyn is not?
Exactly. I mean, this is the same question that I've been asking myself. But I mean, I think they have a huge monopoly on the media over here. You have to understand that. So like, while me and everyone in my bubble thought that it was ridiculous that our prime minister hid in fridge the other day to avoid an interview. I don't know if you saw that.
While wearing a backpack, by the way, also.
It was very, very bizarre.
shabby suits and like a Timbuktu backpack.
Yeah, but you know, likely to report on the fact that Corbyn had blurry glasses or, you know, a mark on his suit than they are to report on something like that. So I think, I don't know, the media and the monopoly that the Conservatives have over it, and it makes me feel pretty pessimistic for the future.
Well, let's turn to that future. The next 6 months, the next year, what do you expect to happen? The last year or so, like, I'm not an expert in UK politics or anything like that, but it seems like the path to Brexit has been bumpy at the very least. So what happens with that over the next year?
I mean, I don't. Did you see that Boris Johnson said today in a speech, "Now we can all find closure and begin to heal."
Oh, jeez.
Which I thought was just the most absurd thing to say. It's like this is just the beginning of it, dude. Like we haven't even started. But yeah, I mean, like if we're to believe what the plan is, he's going to take that deal back to Commons. It will most likely be passed. We leave the EU in January, and then supposedly our trade deal will be negotiated by December. But I think that in terms of like a day to day, what that impact is going to be on the people of Britain, it's really unpredictable. But what we can look at is what happened since the referendum results. And that was a spike in hate crime, a spike in this really, really horrible, scary anti-migrant rhetoric. So if we're to go by the past, then I think that it's going to get a lot worse. It's going to be more of that. There's going to be many, many people who feel very, very unwelcome in the UK and scared. Yeah.
And that is obviously very unfortunate. Looking at what I've seen in the last, just since the results of the election, some of it British media, but a lot of it US-based media. When I have seen them discuss Corbyn, it is, he's an anti-Semite. If you support him, you're an anti-Semite. And this is proof that going to the left is how you lose to the far right. And they're saying that sort of for Britain or for the UK, but they're also saying that for the US, that this is proof that you cannot defeat the far right by moving to the left. Do you think that in either of these cases, that is a fair conclusion for some of the mainstream media to come to?
No, I don't. And you'd have to get me on for like an hour to talk about the anti-Semitism thing. But I don't know why this is the new tactic. I mean, hasn't Bernie now been accused of being an anti-Semite, even though he's Jewish?
Yes, earlier today I saw a tweet to that effect.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. The thing is, I don't see any of Labour's policies or this manifesto as this like hard left thing. What, free healthcare? Making it so that people aren't having to get their blood taken in a corridor while they're terminally ill? Like, that doesn't seem like this like crazy idea to me. The election and the results of it have affected me very, very closely. Like my parents rely heavily on the NHS. My mother has a degenerative lung disease, and I've watched over the last 10 years how limited her care has become. And it scares me. It really scares me. And I read all these headlines about people dying when they're on waiting lists for NHS procedures. And I picture it being my own mother. And I can't tell you what that feels like. You know, the reading the exit polls and then just like waiting as the like results became more clear. It's devastating.
Yeah. Well, really sorry to hear that. We here in the US, we've had some really bad elections in the past couple of years. So I can empathize with how the next day feels. But Billy Porter, thank you for joining us. Hopefully we can touch base in the future as the situation in the UK develops.
Yes, thank you. Goodbye.
And thank you everybody for watching. Brett, thank you for sticking around, taking part in this interview. For everybody at home, that's it for the Damage Report for this week. I will be appearing on the main show later today. Brett's latest episode of Happy Half Hour will be available.
Oh my God, it's so fun. There's pigeons with hats on.
There are pigeons with hats. Find out which pigeons, which hats, how do they pair up? And here at the Damage Report, we will see you come Monday. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.